Good evening, and welcome to Blind Spot. Tonight on the program, we are proud to present Valentine's Day Massacre, Dear Diary. Featuring the talents of John Wanzel, Sonia Yoon, Jacob Christopher, Eric S. Humphrey, Wendy Joe, Philip Von Zweck, and myself, I'm Jenny Walters. Each week, Blind Spot presents a unique live radio show that explores the possibilities of the medium. For more information about the program and the people that work each week to produce it, please visit our website at stopgostop.com/blindspot. There you will also find pictures and MP3s of past shows, as well as information about future shows. WLUW doesn't receive funding from the government, corporations, or Loyola University. Almost 100% of our funding comes from listeners like you. We thank you for your generosity. And now, broadcasting from the campus of Loyola University, WLUW 88.7, Chicago, is proud to feature Blind Spot's presentation of Valentine's Day Massacre, Dear Diary. On tonight's show, we share with you our innermost thoughts regarding all that is love, including but not limited to falling in and out of it. As recorded in our very own diaries and those of others from which we are stealing, as well as past letters to loved ones. A Valentine's Day celebration unlike any other, we ponder and remember why Cupid uses arrows.
One week left this summer. I said one week left for me to do all the things I had planned. I found out from Jeremy a few weeks ago that Callie likes me now. She called Ben and asked for my number. So the weekend that Christy had us get together in Dean's apartment was the weekend she got back from Minnesota and decided to call. The church camp friends met at Dean's around 7 o'clock, and we went out for pizza at Pizza Hut, and then back to Dean's for some sex, truth, or dare. Since I'm not experienced in the ways of quote-unquote it, I couldn't involve myself very well. I learned some things about the people that I didn't know before. People, somehow, never seem the same once you know their sexual experiences. Less mysterious, maybe exposed to you. They asked me what I imagined my first time to be like. I didn't ever think of that, strangely. God knows I've thought of everything else. And they expected me to explain this to them? Practically impossible. The next day I went out with them to the mall. Never liked hanging out at the mall, but I thought, I bought a shirt that fits me well. A good thing for a shirts to do. When I got back, Callie, her cousin Jenny, and I went to a movie. I don't know if that could be called a date or not. Usually dates involve two people instead of three. Then at 1 o'clock I went back to Dean's and we sat around playing the sentence game. We laughed, I hid from the policeman, and in the morning we realized our sentences weren't that funny. Thursday I called Callie and we did some stuff. She came over to Andrew's so I could show her what we do over there all the time. She was impressed, I could tell. She was stunned at the way we sat and watched TV. It was cool. Then we went to Ben's, and to that spot by the river, and then back to Ben's, and we smoked cigarettes on the porch. And then she took me home.
Sunday morning, just before 11 o'clock, 16 April, 1944. Darlingest kitten, remember yesterday's date, for it is a very important day in my life. Surely it is a great day for every girl when she receives her first kiss. Well then, it is just important for me too. Bram's kiss on the right cheek doesn't count anymore. Likewise, the one Mr. Walker on my right hand. How did I suddenly come by this kiss? Well, I will tell you. Yesterday evening at 8 o'clock, I was sitting with Peter on his divan, and it wasn't long before his arm went around me. Let's move up a bit, I said. Then I don't bump my head against the cupboard. He moved up almost into the corner. I lay my arm around his and across his back, and he just about buried me because his arm was hanging on my shoulder. Now, we've sat like this on other occasions, but never so close together as yesterday. He held me firmly against him, my left shoulder against his chest. Already my heart began to beat faster, but we hadn't finished yet. He didn't rest until my head was on his shoulder and his against it. When I sat upright again after about 5 minutes, he soon took my head in his hands and laid it against him once more. Oh, it was so lovely. I couldn't talk much. The joy was too great. He stroked my cheek and arm a bit awkwardly, played with my curls, and our heads lie touching most of the time. I can't tell you, Kitty. The feeling that ran through me all the while, I was too happy for words, and I believe he was as well. We got up at 8:30. Peter put on his gym shoes so that when he toured the house he wouldn't make a noise, and I stood beside him. How it came about so suddenly, I don't know. But before we went downstairs, he kissed me through my hair, half on my cheek, half on my ear. I tore downstairs without looking around, and am simply longing for today. Yours, Anne.
September 6th, 1993. Matt told me he is in love with me, and I feel butterflies thinking about it. I believe I feel the same way. It's a feeling anyway that seems different from before, and if you label it, I guess it's love. It's a longing, a yearning to be with him, laugh with him, talk, touch, play, and look at him. I'm lonely already, even though I'm still here, and I hate anticipating the pain. I hate knowing the pain will come. There must be a reason why I met him now. To guess leaves me with expectations and unanswered questions about the future. To not ask why leaves me feeling empty and scared. I'm so frightened that when I say goodbye, I am saying goodbye to him forever, to this feeling, to the butterflies, all of it. Most of all, I'm frightened of the pain of leaving. Does that mean the end has come? Am I clinging because I love him or because I'm scared to go? If I were rational with my emotions, it would seem silly to cling to a person because you're scared to leave. That only makes leaving more difficult. But how rational am I? My impending departure definitely casts a certain feel to the whole situation. It stops me from fully enjoying myself, knowing it will end. And there are the rules. They say, too short of time to love him, and don't expect you'll meet English boys, you'll never want to come back. You only care because you're leaving. I hate those rules. How can there be rules? Am I a fool? Am I... Am I blind? Lost all sense? Or is this how it is? And I've found an element that is what it is all about, and it lasts and lasts. I guess I don't want to be sad twice. Sad that I'm leaving him, and sad again. When it all changes. He changes, I change, etc. Oh, I wish. Oh, wish smish. Oh, Matt, funk juggler. You juggle me. Eric, I need you to finish this, please.
Okay. Funk juggler. You juggle me. I don't know which way is up. I just feel something more. I miss you when you're gone for one day. But alone 1 year? What am I going to do? The tug of war inside me has made me tired.
Thanks.
So he writes me again, only to say much of the same thing. I can see that it is probably more telling that he's been thinking about what happened and that it still bothers him. I can go on attempting to psychoanalyze him, but that's obsessive and renders him more space in my mind than he deserves now. I'm still disappointed in him, and he probably feels the same way toward me. Not that we've even had an eye-to-eye conversation since the debacle. I can practically hear his joints reverting back to the state they were in before he met me. Rabid for a particular attention, he accuses. If all you wanted was my attention, why did you choose to test me and manipulate me? Maybe our timing is and always will be off. We have the same impulses, the same tendencies, but we divide when we approach a state of recognition. He becomes self-depreciating. I, too, do a big load of enough of it myself to qualify as toxic. But I don't do it publicly and wear it like a badge as he does. I just realize that is sort of what is going on, and that people and situations might become conquests and caricatures for a clever piece of writing that I can keep a persona working. All that stuff said in the email doesn't speak to me. It's the follow-up email he sends me. I'm on this short carbon copy list that transcribes a correspondence with his friend. In his response to this personal letter with his buddy, he begins to describe his misadventures and embarrassments, himself as his own cartoon. That makes me think all this. He is very articulate, and he is correct. That is what is aggravating, that someone you might want to call wrong is saying exactly what you are saying. In essence, he's agreeing with you, but somehow he is still wrong in the most perverse, sad, and inhumane way. I can finally say that my demons don't have as much tendency anymore to keep me brittle and flocked.
Saturday, September 14, 1986. Where was she last night? This just keeps on happening. I wait, and she never shows up. I stood there at the game like an idiot. She said she would meet me. I just don't understand what's wrong with me. Why does she hate me? Does she hate me? I can't even tell anymore. I saw her at school talking to J.M. He could be the new thing, making me old news. Tuesday, December 9, 1986. New girl. Oh, man. I have got to find out what her story is. I'm sure she has a boyfriend, but I bet she's in the sights of any other guy. So many other guys in school. I've got to talk to her in the morning before everybody else gets their hooks in her. She probably won't even give me the time of day anyway. I mean, the hot ones always hate me. I guess I could always go back with Christy. She's hot enough, I guess. She's just so dull. Dull. January 7, 1987. I got to sit next to BG in comp class today. I was really hoping that we would break into our review groups. I never really get much of a chance to talk to her. Oh, what's the point? She's going out with what's-his-name anyway. God, I can't stand that guy. January 8, 1987. What am I doing? I try and talk and it's just all gibberish. Blah, 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 blah. Great. Real smooth. March 15, 1987. Dear Journal, I know it's been quite a long time since I've talked to you, but you'll never believe what I've been doing. I've been dating. I know it's hard to believe. Melissa is, I don't know how to put it. She's great looking. She's funny. Perhaps more importantly, she laughs at my jokes, unlike a certain girl who shall remain nameless. She's hot. I don't even really know what I can say. Melissa is. Just is.
September 20th, 1991. I'm really, really sick. My throat hurts, and I'm tired even though all I do is sleep. I went to the doctor. His name was Dr. Male. He was a creepy, eye contact all the time kind of doctor. At one point, he asked me about my sexual history. When I told him, he said, "Are you lying?" And then he made me promise that I wasn't lying. I have one word: freaker. He says I have a sinus infection. I'm supposed to drink a lot of fluids and take some $64 medicine. I'm going to have Anne do the half supine on me if she's not afraid to touch me. Some people in my suite tend to treat me like a phlegm leper. My mouth is dry, even though I'm drinking fluids. I haven't done any exercises and I've missed class, but as soon as I'm better...
I really should have been writing all this. This year has been the greatest and scariest of my life, and I've had more fun and more problems than I can even remember. Looking back through these pages, I can't believe how much I've thought about that girl, and it still doesn't stop. Will is done with her now. I was right about her all along. I told him that it wouldn't work and that he would get hurt. I don't know if he just didn't agree or didn't care, but he now sees the truth. And it's not that she's an incredibly great person that makes it hurt, as I would think it would be. What hurts is that she just chooses to have an empty head and doesn't care about anything. It hurts because I tried to help her, to change her, but eventually she must have gotten tired of it. I feel like crap because I couldn't connect with her. It lowered my self-confidence until I figured out her true nature. Will was depressed for a long time because he didn't know why she suddenly cut him off. Then he found out that she was just a really screwed up little girl. He invited her over to Anders on Friday, when I was drinking with the Ben friends and at Scott Long's. He wanted to find out what happened between them, but she, as usual, was unable to communicate. She was trying to leave to go get drunk, at the same time her relationship was ending. When Will told me this, it pissed me off. How could she be so cold and unemotional as to leave Will without a clue and go get drunk? How damn important is that? She has to alter her mind before she can deal with her problems. The sad thing is, all she's done to us. Jake was the first, and he doesn't care about her at all. Then came me, and I had some fun. I miss having fun with her. I think the problem was that I cared too much about her, and I didn't want to let her be empty-headed. I wanted to fix what her screwed-up childhood did to her. Then Will betrayed me. I would have expected it from her, but never from him. Will said he was with her for about 2 weeks. He got really screwed up over her. I've seen him battling demons many times, but it was never external. It was never about another person. Now he's as pissed off as I was. On Saturday, we practiced some Dionysus at Anders, even though I didn't succeed in either getting drunk or getting to the art world. The highlight of the night was when Will, Frank, and I were screaming and yelling in hillbilly voices about how we wanted to marry that little girl. That was a reference to how she told me at Scott's how she's just a girl, just a kid, and doesn't want to be married in high school. She thinks she can use that just a kid excuse for everything she does wrong. It's going to suck for her when she grows up and can't use that excuse. I really wish she could have heard us that night. We just tore down everything about her, and we did it using metaphors, which is still pretty amazing. I don't think there's anything we couldn't explain using metaphors. Then, when everyone else was asleep, I stayed up and talked to Will. We talked about this town, these pathetic drunk losers, Callie, and the future. At 6 o'clock, we came to the conclusion that despite what Callie says, she does feel better than everyone, and it's essential to her being that she does. She wants to think that she's superior and doesn't like it when she doesn't. She's just like all the others. She has different interests, but that's it. That's what I was attracted to. I thought she would be like me because she likes some of the same things. But her values are nothing like mine, and she doesn't want to face her flaws. That's why I think she didn't like hanging out with us. With us, she couldn't feel superior.
Friday, 18 February, 1944. Dear Kitty, whenever I go upstairs now, I keep on hoping that I shall see him. Because my life now has an object and I have something to look forward to, everything has become more pleasant. At least the object of my feelings is always there, and I needn't be afraid of rivals, except Margot. Don't think I'm in love, because I'm not. But I do have the feeling all the time that something fine can grow up between us, something that gives confidence and friendship. If I get half a chance, I'll go up to him now. It's not like it used to be when he didn't know how to begin. It's just the opposite. He's still talking when I'm half out of the room. Mummy doesn't like it much and always says I'll be a nuisance and I must leave him in peace. Honestly, she doesn't realize that I've got some intuition. She looks at me so queerly every time I go into Peter's little room. If I come downstairs from there, she asks me where I've been. I simply can't bear it and think it's horrible. Yours, Anne.
October 28th, 1993, 1:45 a.m. Tonight was the Halloween thingy at the Paradox. Vodka shots beforehand. I felt like a freshman again, but in a way it was fun. We got to the dance club, and I danced my drunken state away, sweated it out. Here's the big news. Toby said to me, "Can I ask you a question?" I immediately knew the bomb was coming down. "Are you into me at all?" he says, and I said, "What?" He repeated, "Yowza, help." I smiled and said, "Toby, why do you ask me such things when I can't even hear you?" Finally, I said, "Yes, but..." It was a bit of a lie. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I like him as a pal and a friend, but I'm really not into him sexually. I mean, sometimes I wonder what it would be like, but I don't want to act on it. I can't get Matt out of my mind. He's the one I want. Oh, how I wish I was with him and none of this had happened. Toby said it was a bit... Well, wait, I skipped a part. I said if I didn't believe Matt was somebody special, I couldn't hold out for him, but I do believe he's somebody special. Toby said it was a bit of an ego boost to know that he did have a shot if Matt wasn't in the picture. I say let him have his ego boost. He asked me if I was impressed that he asked. I said I was flattered and glad he had enough respect to ask instead of just try and make a move. I asked him if it was going to be all weird now. He said no, but we'll see. On the dance floor, he said something sweet, though. He said, "Maybe I can be your best friend in England." I smiled. Aww. That was a real nice thing to say. Irene told him about the bet David made. David, though, he had won it two nights ago. Ha ha. I think she may have hurt his feelings because she said that would be the easiest $5 she ever won. I hate all this around me and all this talk. I guess it keeps life interesting and it's fun to gossip, but it feels weird. I never thought I'd have a hot, sweet boyfriend who tells me he's in love with me, and then some Irish guy saying he's into me too. When it rains, it pours. Oh, I missed my pretty boy tonight. I hope I get a letter tomorrow. Please. My presentation went fine. The class is pretty easy. All classes are. Just have to turn in some more papers. I got a book on the Dalai Lama today. I love him. So far, it's good, and I feel really good, like I'm educating myself. Yeah. What a weird world. I guess what makes me feel weirdest is that it feels like Toby is just waiting for Matt and I to split and for him to make his move. If Matt and I split, the last thing I think I'd want would be another boy. Good night. November 13th, 1993, 2 a.m. I'm going to vomit now. I'm sickened by two people, Toby and myself. There's a lovely wee Irish lass with red hair in his room giggling at his cork tails. He speaks to me with a condescending voice. He all but ignores me, comes into my room to say hello, but that's all he says, and tonight brings three people into my room. The chick who likes him and is flirting disgustingly well. The chick named Toby, who was the biggest know-it-all around me, defensive to high heaven, and Chris, well, he's just entertaining. Two of them speak in Irish while I sit in my room surrounded by people I don't know who aren't interested in speaking to me. And Sarah and Irene and Chris and I were having a nice game of gin with my best friend's mix in the back. And blammo, he comes in with his harem. I hate him right now. But where's my part in all of this? Why do I care? Here's why. I'm disgusted with myself because I came to depend and feel secure on the attention Toby showered me with, knowing full well it was a crush. And he's once a friend, and I told people I didn't care. I told myself, and the only reason I do care now is because I'm not the center of attention anymore. The question remains, was Toby a friend of mine? Yes, in that we hung out together. I enjoyed hanging out together. I really enjoyed all three of us hanging out together. Until it got weird. I want my cake, and I want to eat it too. So now I find some new Irish chick, and not even a see ya to me. What's worse, besides my room smelling like smoke, is the fact that I haven't been very nice to him. Al was really annoying me, so I guess I can't complain. Unconditional attention is addictive, and it's my own fault that I let myself fall prey. I wanted so badly to call Matt tonight, but I didn't. I wanted to tell him all of this, but I can't. It would be awkward. I just feel like Irene and Sarah are my only friends here, and Sarah and I don't seem very much when Jen and she and I get together. I feel like a third wheel, partly because I'm hypersensitive, and partly because I am a third wheel. And no one really comes knocking down my door to party, but I should be thankful for what I do have, and it's my own fault for not making an effort, and at least it'll be easy to say goodbye, and I'm a freak, and I should go to sleep now. And I saw that boy James making out once with that girl, and I actually felt sick. I guess I'm homesick, but not for home, just for security, even if it's a false sense of it, like Toby. I hate that my room smells bad. I love that I'm doing aerobics. I love that we're going to London. I like that dress, and I can't wait to start Christmas shopping. Yeah.
Festival called Esther Jam in Wicker Park. I ran into a woman whom I'd met about a year before while visiting Chicago. I was really excited to see her again. Didn't know much about her, and I had a girlfriend already at the time. Several weeks later was the 2004 presidential election. The result of the 2004 United States presidential election was the reason I received one of the first emails from Brenda, remarking on the election and forwarding me a fake magazine cover about how doomed we all were. So here's the first personal email I wrote to Brenda in response to her email about the elections. Hi, Brenda. I predicted, sadly, that if Bush won, it would be due to fraud. I truly believe the people propping him up have lied and cheated and stole another election, which isn't to say that millions of confused, misinformed, uninformed, or hypocritical, privileged, hateful sadists did not combine to vote for doofus at all. Far too many people did. Some of them were even related to. I am now imagining lawsuits and hard proof of election machine errors and fraud. In addition, I'm imagining love, 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 sunshiny love from the God in my belly, not the one from above. Brenda's email response to me, dated November 4, 2004. I'm with you on that. Yeah, we need to form a salon where we can get down on a regular basis about the ugly and to help each other remember the beautiful. The next email from Brenda, dated November 15th, 2004. Had one of those epic dreams last night. Most of the details slipped away soon after waking. But I remember we took a road trip across the country and danced and got into little side adventures all over the place. When we arrived at your place, which seemed to be somewhere on the West Coast, you showed me a video you made of our trip. And I remember thinking the edits were really clever. Your house didn't seem like your house to me, though. The furniture was 1970s suburban. Not cool retro, but grandparent-like. No judgment. It just didn't make sense to me because I didn't see you in it. But it was comfortable furniture. The last thing I remember was asking you where I might sleep because I felt like I could really conk out. And it was a good thing. It was action-packed with vivid details, but most of the dream disappeared before I could gather the unwieldy parts and take it with me into the day. My response to her, November 15, 2004. Sounds so lovely, the dream and the parts you remember, and the feeling that you awoke to, regardless of the details slipping. I'd say the 70s grandma furniture comes from other deep you stuff, Maybe your Aunt Helen? Or whatever that kind of decor means to you. What does it mean? At least it was comfy. Last night I clonked out, for real. Went to sleep around 2 a.m. after hanging with the girls in the bungalow watching movies and drinking Orange Crush. I opened a Chicago bank account today. I'm now a part of the city. And this on the same day I floated into the city of your subconscious. Things seem to be going well. Smiling, breathing, here. XOXO, November 16th. Her response. Glad all is well for you. That's a good word. If you think about it, it makes sense. That word was so big in the 50s. So much repression and hidden pleasure. And swell is kind of like that. It's a tame little word that can imply so much. I mean, really, swell. It's so provocative. Any chance I left my favorite fuzzy hat in your van? November 17th responds. I don't want to go to class. I like some of the people, but I'm feeling like I need to play hooky and get grounded in a quiet way. Class starts in 5 minutes. I thought of you and smelled cinnamon. I pictured your belt loops. I'll be on the lookout for your favorite fuzzy hat, although I've not seen it yet. She responds, November 19th. I dreamed I was reading the best book ever and was thrilled with each word. Then I realized the book was a movie and I was sitting in a packed theater filled with lots of interesting people and we were all waiting to see it, very thrilled. Then I realized I had written the book and made the movie and I thought that life could be so exciting and good, 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 good. December 20th, she wrote again, after I had dropped off a CD mixtape that I'd made for her. Her email reads, now that I love certain 80s music, can you please send me the song list for the CD you made me? I listened to Sarah again today and it's beautiful. But where was the girl singing in my head? Must have been a dream. I responded on December 21st, 2004, with the list of the songs I made for her on CD. I Like Girls, Alice Cooper, Frederick, Hattie Smith, Feeling Good, Nina Simone, While My Heart Is Still Beating, Lots of Music, Lover Come Back to Me, Billie Holiday, Sarah, Fleetwood Mac, Spirits in the Night, Bruce Springsteen, 4th of July, Amy Mann, Save a Prayer, Duran Duran, My Funny Valentine, Chet Baker, Avalon, Roxy Music, Wishing, A Flock of Seagulls, Baby It's Cold Outside, Ray Charles and Betty Carter, Crawling Back to You, Tom Petty, Save Me, Amy Mann, Slave to Love, Roxy Music, Always True to You in My Fashion, Blossom Beery. Connected to the song list was the beginning of the story. The story starts. And the girl, who was nearly 9 and late for school, wore an orange, brown, and cream wool scarf, dropped off by the Santa Claus girls on Tuesday. Ronnie was her name, and she wanted badly to make coconut cookies for her teacher more than the other kids. It was the last day before Christmas holiday, and Ronnie was the only one who hadn't brought a treat. As Sherry Durka reminded her during gym class, it made Ronnie want to squeeze Sherry's face so hard that it would be stuck tight between the monkey bars, and they'd have to cut her ears off to get it back out. Ronnie's mom worked very hard in the hospital laundry, but they didn't have sugar, flour, or butter to spare, let alone coconut, which came from the tropics, and which she had just the one time at Mrs. Paddock's. So when her mom left for the graveyard shift, Ronnie pretended to be asleep again, and when she heard the fading rumble of the little car making the left turn at the corner of Fulton and Gold, Ronnie went outside with a wooden spoon and her wrinkled flannel nightgown and the orange, brown, and cream wool scarf. She ran so hard, she knew she was waking up the worms, and with the spoon, she dug and dug at the frozen place where she had buried the paper bag. Brenda replied, December 21st, same day. The whole story in each line. Thanks for sending it to me. I'm smiling a lot. It's beautiful. All of it. So over the course of the next month, January 2005, I worked on the story of Ronnie just so I could keep writing to her. She had just broken up with the woman she was dating, and I was starting to have a really hard time figuring out if I should do the same. Thank you. February 14th, 2006. I refuse to listen to George W. Bush's voice. Brett is on her way over for breakfast, and Ronnie is somewhere in the eighth chapter, making her coconut cookies and burning her eyebrows off.
The end.
You are listening to Blindspot's presentation of Valentine's Day Massacre, Dear Diary. Tonight we are sharing with you our innermost thoughts regarding all that is love, including but not limited to falling in and out of it as recorded in our very own diaries from yesteryear. But right now we're going to pause and bring you teenage love poetry.
I've lived my whole life up to this moment. When you turn, the song plays. When you finally see me standing there, and you smile.
I sought at once my Savior's side before I found my place to hide, soldered and bolted within my mind, building cyborg arms and straps that bind. Touched your skin, felt so soft, brushed my hair, it came right off. Paint me any way you choose, because I can never lose. A weighty mantle of hand scythed hay brightens eyes and instills surprise. A vital harvest is summer's way of soothing weathered eyes. In the fire they call my name. On the stage it's still the same. Conversations down the hall. The trusting heart has done it all. Fears turn into prayers I bring. Burdens slip past everything. 10 men hallowed wide awake. Leave an offering for them to take. Efforts surpassed millions to strive. For those who wish to be alive.
You've got me. I'm stuck and I've got nowhere to go. Once I looked out my window, seeing only you before me, I reach to touch the glass. You speak. Those vile words fly from your mouth, turning my window, once bright, to blackness. Heavy. Dark. And I see nothing.
Love is her name. Love is her voice. Love is when she looks at me. Love is her holding my hand. Love is touching her face. She comes my way, and desire is my name. Into my life, she is the song I hear in my head. She is the soundtrack. Loud, heavy, important. In her eyes, I see the future. I hear her when she's not with me. Shh. Listen.
Animals took everything I own. Why can't everyone leave me alone? Angels took my bones. Laid my flesh on the stone. Down we go. Slipped past my clutch. We don't have much. With love and such, a waste of time. Such a fine day, won't you stay? Won't you roar across America's heart? Bang on the walls to wake the sleeping babies? Send me a letter from the garden where the wind blows. And let the wind-blown babies go.
Stop it. Just stop. Everyone just take a deep breath. No matter where I go, what I do in my life, whoever and whatever I become, I will always remember what we had, what we did. One were my first and will always be. I will always see you in the back of my mind. I try not to think of good, only what you said. When it became clear you didn't care, I will always remember you pulling on my heartstrings.
Tomorrow you go. We say that everything is going to be fine. We'll talk every day. Visit most weekends. You tell me that everything is going to be fine. You say I'm the one. I say I'm worried. I'm lost without you. Cold, dark, someone has drawn the blinds. Everyone will talk to you. Everyone will be drawn to you like I am. I fear that when you write your autobiography, I will be no more than a footnote.
Walking into town, cold, pouring down rain, and all I used to be has driven me insane. I used to be free. I used to be happy. What was I trying to be? Why imagine these injuries? Somewhere broken down heroes complain. Somehow the limits will break. Someday the anger will fade through the arches and carve out our names in the rain.
Searching for answers in silly little things, songs, poems, anything to avoid looking inside where I know the truth lies.
September, March 25, 1987. Disaster, catastrophe. She was mean, she was harsh, she was cold. I don't understand. Everything was going great. She told me she loved me. She told me that she'd always be with me. She told me that she needed me, she wanted me, she loved me. It was all a lie. That nasty slut wants someone else. She says things are moving faster than she can keep up with, only because she needs, holds love, someone else. Slut, bitch, crazy. I hate her. No, I don't want to hate her. She'll regret this. She'll come crawling back to me, begging to take her back, and I won't do it. I'll have someone new. Oh, who am I kidding? She's the best thing that's ever going to happen to me. I'll never find anybody like her again. The great love of my life. I'm doomed to be alone. That's just how she wanted it. Bitch. What happened? Bitch, bitch, bitch. Slut, slut. I hate her. I hate her. I hate her. God, I wish I hated her. March 26, 1987. I see now. I know now who it is. What does he have that I don't? Why him? Why not me? Why? Bitch, bitch, bitch. March 27, 1987. Seeing one every day, seeing one has broken you, seeing one who has stripped you down to the core every day, it's more than I can take. I'm gonna flunk math. I've gotta sit there by you. If there was any justice in the world, I wouldn't have. I.
So much has happened that is good, and I don't even know where to begin. Things are happening to me that I created and I control, and it makes me think, well, it makes me feel or hope that it's all worth something. The beginning of this is Catherine. She's my girl, and I'm her boy. I'd seen her around school. I'd even had class with her before, and I had no idea who she was. Didn't care to meet her. But she happened to be roommates with my friend Kristen. She looked lonely one night. Me and Chris and Meredith had come back from the galleries one night, and Kristen and stopped by their place to drink. None of us knew Catherine, and Kristen didn't bother to introduce her. So she sat in the kitchen by herself drinking a beer. She looked lonely that night, so I tried to talk to her. I'm not usually one to talk to strangers who I know nothing about, but it's no coincidence that Catherine is a beautiful girl. It's hard to not notice her beauty, a very calm, quiet beauty, and I didn't want to feel lonely because I saw her behaving the same way I do, at least the way I act in those similar situations. When nobody's paying attention to me, I often get lost in other thoughts and just stare at stuff. I look like an idiot, but that's because I'm not beautiful. See, look how much I've changed. I just caught myself without a cynical thought in my head. That would have never happened before, and I look at this stuff I'm writing. I shouldn't write when I'm happy. It breaks the flow, loses continuity. It confuses me. I look at us both. It took us both a long time to start something. We began as friends, which is always the best, drinking beer together and talking all night until the sun came up. And I would make that long walk home feeling angry at myself for being too much of a wuss to make a move. We were friends for probably 2 months before something happened, and it seemed like forever. It seemed like it would never happen. One night it became very apparent that we were both flirting and neither of us confident enough to take a chance. That's always my biggest problem, letting fear of rejection paralyze me. But this time I kissed her, and she didn't say no. It was such a good feeling, so relieving and so exciting to feel wanted. I didn't know what I was missing this whole time. Feeling needed is so much better than feeling ignored and left behind. It makes me find difficulty in hating things. Of course, I've had very little experience with relationships, and so all I can really compare to is Callie, and I hate that. I hate that she still continues to be in my thoughts, even as a shadow of something much better than I have now. I trust Catherine. There's the largest difference. Callie would run away, fly like a little bird, as soon as she got the chance, because she's afraid of being tied down, even by good things like I should have been to her. Catherine makes me feel so comfortable that I don't doubt for 1 minute that she is who she says she is. I trust this one. We have a really honest relationship, and I feel like I can say anything to her. I'm so happy with her because of this trust, and I feel like I should push the limits of honesty just to see how far I can go before pushing her away. I've never felt this way about anyone, including Callie, I think. When I was with Callie, I didn't want to love her because that would be giving more strength to hurt me with. And now that I think of it, I may have fallen in love with that girl in a very simple, immature manner, but I think I now have a more mature, more objective understanding of what love must be like, and I can't seem to make up my mind whether I love Catherine or not. I think, aside from my general inability to decide, I feel very pressured to say the word, and that makes it harder to. I was quite shocked, and I didn't expect her to fall in love with me so fast. I guess I just expected that these things take longer. This difference in emotional connection is not good. Of course, I want her to love me, but I think it hurts her that I can't feel the same way at this point, and I can see this becoming a serious problem in the future.
September 4th, 1992. It's been a long while since I've journaled. Much has happened, much I want to record and think about. I confronted Brett. The first time I saw him, I ran into my room and hid. I saw him again on campus, once diverting my eyes and again staring him down. Finally, last Friday, I decided the time had come, and the next time I saw him, I would speak my mind. He was outside the sub and was with Matt, Jay, and Gabe. Whoopi. I turned to Laura for support. She said, "May the power of 1,000 women be in your soul." That was all I needed to hear. So I went up to him and said, "Brett, hi, do you think we could talk for a few minutes?" He said, "Hi, yeah, gosh, I'm glad you said something. Yeah, hi, okay." So we walked to the grass and sat down. I tried to act nonchalant. I was very nervous, but I drank from my juice box as if this were any situation. He said that he and Matt were just talking about me. Matt said that Brett shouldn't avoid me. So I asked him if he planned on ignoring me all year. He said no, that he thought I didn't want to talk to him, so he didn't come up to me. He asked me if I saw him trying to get my attention. I told him I saw someone trying to stare me down. I said, "I want you to tell me to my face." He said, "Tell what to your face?" I said, "I don't know what, you tell me. Why would you treat someone like this?" He says, "I got back with Lizzie and I didn't know how to tell you." Somewhere in here, he said, "I'm sorry." And I said, "I don't want to hear your apologies. That's you taking care of your conscience. You really need to take care of me right now." He said, "Yes, you're right." I don't know what to say because it's all wrong. I told him, "Yep, you are in the ultimate catch-22 because no matter what you say, it's wrong." I told him I thought it must be a really pathetic existence to go through life treating people this way. I told him I thought about him. I thought of him when I went poop this summer. He started physically whimpering away, and I told him to quit it. "I'm not going to bite you." I told him how I had done nothing wrong. He agreed. I explained how I didn't want anything intense and that I thought he was the one moving too fast. He said he did drugs this summer and knew I didn't like it and was afraid how I would handle it. He said he thought I was fragile. Poor choice of words. "You could never break me," I said. He apologized, but couldn't think of a better word. He told me he was afraid I had changed my mind and didn't like him anymore. That was probably the most blatant lie, pathetic, of all his excuses. He told me he still had my picture. I told him he was a freaker for having it, but not talking to me. Told him I gave away his toy and tore up his picture. He told me I shouldn't have given the toy away. I said, "Don't tell me what to do, and why should I keep it?" He said he talked to my picture. Once again, Freaker. Told me he thinks he's literally insane. Wow, what a unique and easy excuse for treating people like crap. Said Lizzie hates him and the only way she could get back at him was by going out with him. Whatever, freako, sicko. He said I looked good, that he liked me, etc. He asked me to go book shopping with him. I couldn't believe it. Asked me to be his friend, etc. When I brought up the fact that we were going to get dressed up and go out, I could have sworn he was on the verge of asking me to still do it. But I said, guess you really messed that up, didn't you? I gave him his note back. He told me he didn't want it. Then he recited it. The whole TOTS speech. After he finished, I recited, you may say I'm as cold as ice, but ice is good for a burn. If you were a woman, you would have known that and rubbed me the right way to let me soothe your burn. Then I folded the note and plopped it in his bag. He again asked me to be his friend. A draining hour it was. He looks like crap. More later.
June 22nd, 2005. I am so very upset with you. I gave you my heart, and you gobbled it up completely without a second thought and spit it back in my face. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with the chewed up pieces. They are of no use to me. You are the first and only person I have ever entrusted my entire heart, and though at the beginning I was leery about letting you have it, I decided to take the plunge, because I never thought in a million years that you, if anyone, would or could ever do this to me. You, that I would have taken 1,000 bullets for just so you wouldn't get a bruise. I'm so very disappointed that you would allow me to fall so hard for you and then provide me with nothing but the hardest ground to land on. I wonder if this non-communicating thing is working for you, because it hurts me more and more every day. See, I'm still taking all the bullets even though they have left me covered in holes. I would have given anything and everything to you. I would have done anything for you. I would have changed who I was and wanted to become just to be near you. I feel so stupid and it hurts so badly to know how much I was willing to sacrifice and how little you could give. I would have loved you forever, honestly and completely. The scary thing is that I think I still might. What's love got to do with it? Got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? What's love got to do? Got to do with it? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken?
Dear Catherine, hi. I'm sitting here listening to a mix I made called Songs I Can't Listen to Anymore Because They Remind Me of Catherine. Of course, the title is a little ridiculous because I've been listening to it a lot lately. Number one on the list is a new song, probably one you've never heard by a group called Anthony and the Johnsons, which is a shame because I just discovered it and now I can't even listen to it without feeling crappy. You know, I just had a thought that almost makes me want to stop writing right now. I was just thinking that I don't remember if you actually keep the letters people send to you. I don't remember ever seeing any boxes or drawers that had any letters or anything. So I suppose that you probably just throw them away, and that bothers me. See, for me, part of the great thing, actually the only great thing about writing letters is thinking that people will look at them sometime in the future and remember me. Then maybe they'll give me a call and talk to me or write me a letter. The fact that I feel this way is an accurate illustration of what I'm going through right now in general, but I'll get to that a little later. I've been having nightmares lately, one of which was a kind of distorted reenactment of how things ended with us. It's unusual for me to have these kind of realistic dreams. It also involved a painful vision of what it was like to lay in bed next to you, painful because it was so great and made me feel like what's going on right now is some kind of excursion from my normal life, as if when we're done with whatever we're doing, we'll just go back to the way things were. In some ways, I always thought that we would come back to each other. We'd break up, of course, but we'd get back together sometime in the future. That's what my dream must have been about. Now Yo La Tengo is playing Our Way to Fall. It's on the list because a lot of the lyrics seem to describe how we met, or something. I'm writing this letter because I didn't write you any letters this last summer. I don't even know if I'll send it, actually. It will probably take a lot of courage to send this letter. One of the things that I find so unfair is how both of us changed after we broke up. You don't even know. I cook every night now, and I have been for probably 3 months. I also clean and shower more often, too. I confess, part of that is because I want to be more attracted to some girl somewhere, so she might like me, but it's also because I've been more concerned with my health and tired of feeling embarrassed to bring people over to my apartment. And you, apparently, you've changed for the better as well. You've got your health problems under control, you're happy, you're excited about things. I wish I could be happy for you right now, but I can't because I'm sad for myself. And it'll be hard for us to remain friends as long as I feel that way. But what can I do? I might have made some mistakes that I'm paying for now. We'll see if that's true in the future. I feel like in some ways we might have switched roles, or at least I feel like I might be in a similar place to where you were when we first met, when you were 23. I just want to get over you, but I also don't want to lose you. I'm afraid that you'll want to lose me, though. What girl wants an ex-boyfriend writing sappy letters to them when they've already moved on and found their quote-unquote reflection? I keep thinking about that picture I drew that described our relationship after we first got together. The picture of the Tyrannosaurus Rex and the Brontosaurus with the question mark in the middle of the heart. I only feel more like the Brontosaurus than the T-Rex. But I know that even if you weren't with someone, getting back together isn't an option for us. We broke up because we want different things in life, which I hope is actually true, and not just a thing we made ourselves believe because we got tired of each other. Familiarity breeds contempt, you know. And also, absence makes the heart grow fonder. The other thing that makes me sad is that you don't seem familiar anymore. You're unfamiliar and you're absent. Maybe that's just because you've been keeping things from me, that big secret you hit me with all at once. Or maybe you actually are such a different person that it's hard to recognize you, Catherine. But you're still so important to me. I'm sorry I hurt you with the way we broke up. We should have been hurting together at the same time. I hate myself for hurting you, because you never hurt me. At least not like that. But it hurts to hear you say that you never completely trusted me. I don't know how I could have done anything more to prove it to you. Sometimes I felt a love for you so much that it hurt because I could never fully express it. And you're saying now that you already trust this new guy more than you ever trusted me. I just don't know how I'll ever feel happy again. I keep trying to find a conclusion to this that ties everything together. The problem is that it's not clear to me what I want. In the past 2 weeks since you told me you're in love again, I've gone through probably every kind of emotion that I could feel about this. Anger, sadness, regret, dread, love, I don't know, all the negative ones at least. It just made me realize that it's really over and can't ever go back. I was really happy back then, and you were too. Don't look back at us and think that you were always miserable, because that's not true. I can remember watching you cry because you were so happy. Don't forget that. We had a lot of love for each other. I realize now that this is just a pathetic attempt to not be forgotten and try to hold on to something that used to be mine. I can't stay in that special place in your heart, I know. Just don't listen to me.
You have been listening to Blindspot, Valentine's Day Massacre, Dear Diary, featuring the talents of John Wanzel, Sonia Yoon, Jacob Christopher, Eric S. Humphrey, Wendy Joe, and Jenny Walters. Tonight's program was engineered by Philip Von Zweck and produced by myself. I'm Jenny Walters. Each week, Blindspot presents a unique live radio show that explores the possibilities of the medium. For more information about the program and the people that work each week to produce it, please visit our website at stopgostop.com/blindspot. There you will also find pictures and MP3s of past shows, as well as information about future shows. Tune in next week at 10 o'clock when Blindspot presents Hail to the Chief, as Blindspot honors our nation's presidents, both the factual and the fictional ones. Produced by Eric S. Humphrey and John Wanzel. And on February 26th, Blindspot teams up with the U.S. Postal Service for a program inspired by our beloved fans. Are you tired of Blindspot and all its yip-yap? Do you love Blindspot like it was your first girlfriend? It is your chance to voice your opinion about the show, and we will respond to your suggestions and criticisms live to air. That's right, live to air. Send your love hate mail to P.O. Box 667, Chicago, Illinois, by February 26th. or email blindspot@stopgostop.com. Thank you for listening. This has been Blindspot.